Well, we have been taking a journey together as we prepare for Easter. In the church, we call this the season of Lent. And Lent is about journeying with Jesus through his life and ministry. It is a journey that will eventually take us to his crucifixion and his resurrection. Guiding us along this journey, we have been reading our way through the Gospel of Mark. This week, I invited you to read chapters 7 and 8. If you didn't read it, don't worry. The important stuff, I'll quote you anyway. But this coming week, I invite you to read chapters 9 and 10. Seriously, there is some good stuff in there. It's going to get personal, but we'll talk about that. But as we make our way into 7 and 8 this week, there's some important things to pay attention to. It's very important to note that as we reach chapter 8 of this gospel, we're now halfway through. Now, we're not halfway through Jesus' life, but we're halfway through the story. It's funny, there is a significant turning point in the story in what we read and we'll talk about this morning. At this point in the story, all of a sudden, everything speeds up and slows down at exactly the same time. It's strange that way. You see, the events and the changes all around Jesus begin to speed up as things happen faster and faster. All while the storytelling slows down. Our author of the gospel begins to take a lot more time telling us about each and every one of these moments, not rushing through it at all. When you look at the gospel, the first third of Mark covers almost, 30-some years, really, if we count the early stuff. But really, let's just even say 3 years that first few chapters talks about. The third that we're in right now covers about a month or two. And the final third of this book talks about 1 week. That's how stretched out things begin to come, because there's that much happening. And this is a turning point where all that is to come gets set up. You see, the story is slowing down to bring us closer into the events that are happening. You see, also in this chapter that we read this week, and in the gospel this week, we find Jesus foretelling his death for the very first time. It's a very interesting moment. Jesus sits with the disciples and says, by the way, this is what's coming up. And to about 11 of them, it goes like this. And to one of them, it goes like this. The disciples have a lot of mixed reactions. Most of them don't get it. Maybe it's denial. Maybe it's confusion. And then there's Peter. He gets it, but he doesn't like it. In fact, Peter even pulls Jesus aside. And I love this. The Bible says Peter rebuked Jesus. Who does that? I can only imagine what it sounded like. Listen, Jesus, we gave up everything. We gave up everything. We're risking our lives. You're upsetting everybody, and we're standing next to you. We know what you're capable of. I mean, what's with this whole take up your cross and follow me to death thing? I mean, seriously, look at the crowds. We're building momentum. People are getting into this. We're just about ready to take it to the next level, Jesus. Don't be a downer. Because indeed, this is what the disciples were experiencing. Things were building. Everything we've seen thus far, the crowds are getting bigger. The miracles are getting larger. Everybody thinks this is just about to take off. They are ready for the big flashy finale that brings whatever it is Jesus is all about. But that's the question. What was Jesus all about? The disciples and a good deal of society were sure that Jesus was about to turn the world upside down. I mean, that's what they believed Jesus was going to do, because that's who they believed Jesus was. In fact, they just said so to Jesus because he just asked them. Hear the story as the author of Mark tells it to us. Jesus and his disciples went into the villages near Caesarea of Philippi, and on the way there, Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And the disciples responded, "Some say John the Baptist. Others say that you're Elijah. Still others name lots of different prophets that you might be." And so Jesus asked them, "What about you? Who do you say that I am?" And so Peter answered, "You are Christ, the Messiah." And Jesus ordered him not to tell anyone, because what he was saying could be misinterpreted. This is one of the key moments that we have been journeying toward as we journey along on this journey of relationship. This is what Lent is about, this moment. Now, yes, there is more to Lent. There's still a triumphal entry into Jerusalem. There's teaching and troublemaking. There's the Last Supper. There's the whole trial and crucifixion. And spoiler alert, a resurrection. All of this is still coming. Jesus has some pretty big stuff coming down the road. But all those things that are to come, it all hinges on this one question. Hear Jesus ask, "Who do you say I am?" It comes as a part of a conversation where who do other people, who do... You know, it's interesting. The first time I read this, I was like, what, is Jesus in high school? What do other people say about me? What does everybody else think? What's going on here? Listen, it's not as much drama as it might sound. What are people saying about me was a very important question. Because it goes back to one of the very first things we've talked about that comes up in the Gospel of Mark. People's expectations. The disciples start to rattle off a list of things people have thought, and everything on that list speaks to some of the different beliefs and experiences of the time. The responses given are examples of how folks thought Jesus would overthrow those in power and usher in a new era for the people of Israel. He would be their ruler. Some of the other examples they name are of how Jesus thought, the people thought that Jesus wouldn't just bring in a new era for the people of Israel. But there were folks that thought Jesus was about to usher in an entire new world order. The day of the Lord had arrived and Jesus would become sort of cosmic ruler for a world where the righteous would be uplifted and the unjust would be punished. Oh, both of these expectations, the whole lead Israel and overthrow the world thing, these were ongoing expectations within the religions of Israel. I mean, this was a people who were looking forward to their suffering and their oppression coming to an end. To God doing what God said God would do. The crowds were always looking for someone to be one of these two people. Whether it was for us or for the whole world, we're looking for someone to be one of these two people. And Jesus was the newest, best hope they had. And I tell you, though the world will not be the same by the time we reach the end of our story, it's not going to be changed the way anybody thought. It's not going to be changed how anyone expected. And so Jesus tries to get folks thinking with a relationship question. Jesus wanted people to decide for themselves who he was. Not based on expectations, not based on the hype, but based on their relationship. So Jesus looks at those he loves and he asks a question. Who do you say I am? And that question echoes through into today. Because even today, there are still so many cultural expectations, spiritual assumptions, and religious projections about Jesus. There is no shortage of people in this world trying to tell you who Jesus is, what Jesus can do for you, and why you better agree with them. And through all of that noise comes a question. A question that can be only answered out of our own relationship. Who do you say I am? This became very real for me a few weeks ago. It was time to take down, we have banners we hang on the pedestrian lamps outside. We started that this holiday season, and these are the ones we had up during Advent preparing for the Christmas season. And as we took those down, I was talking with the trustees and said it would be nice to have some banners up on our way into Easter. And we had a conversation about what should be on those banners. I mean, Christmas was easy. Every single week of Advent has a pre-assigned theme. Hope, peace, love, joy. Four themes, four banners, done! But there's no short list for Lent. So in a conversation, we decided that the banners should have words on them that would describe Jesus' life and ministry, since that's the focus of Lent. So the next day, I find myself sitting at my table with a notepad and a pen trying to articulate the life, teachings, and ministry of Jesus. Now, this is something I do pretty often, but in different ways. This was different. Okay, four words. Four words that fit on banners. So half the stuff I learned in seminary isn't going to fit on a banner. I need shorter words. Four words that'll fit on banners and describe the life, teachings, and ministry of Jesus. Okay, oh, how about hope? Oh, no, we already used that one. How about love? Hope, peace, love, and joy were already taken, so I needed new words. I was fascinated by this challenge. And as I wrestled with the ideas and the words, I was reminded of the question that would come to guide our Lenten season. Who do you say I am? That's what we were doing. We were answering that question. So here's my answer. Service, justice, grace, and welcome. Now, this is not definitive. It's a momentary snapshot. There are so many other words, many of which actually share a lot in common, almost to the point of being synonyms with these. We've been doing the Lenten study, and in the conversations about Jesus, I've heard answers like Jesus was inclusive, challenging, caring, inviting, teaching, an enigma. In conversations over coffee, I've heard words like relatable, forgiving, helping, healing, divine, confusing. Any of those words could grace our lampposts and be perfect. There is no shortage of answers. And so this is my question for you. Actually, it's Jesus' question for you. What are your words? Not paragraphs, not run-on sentences, not hyphenated semicolon things because there's so much to fit in. What are your words? We can easily lose ourselves trying to use too many words. I found the requirement to put my thoughts about Jesus into four speakable, understandable words to be very helpful. I couldn't remember the last time I had to do it that simply. Who is Jesus? And yes, simple words require explanation. And no, they're not perfect, and they don't encompass everything. And I'm probably going to think of new ones later. I hope we all do. But what are your words? I believe we need to think about this. And not for some random promotional purpose. We need to think about it because Jesus asks us to. When Jesus asks, this is how I'm responding right now. Service, justice, grace and welcome, hope, peace, love and joy. I'm taking eight. You're welcome to some of these. And I look forward to hearing some new ones from you. What are your words? Because the answer matters, not because of right and wrong, but because of relationship. Now, there's another thing I noticed as I was working on my words. These words sounded really familiar. They sounded familiar because I hear them and see them around this place a lot. Think about it for a minute. Service, justice, welcome, grace. We use these words. And it makes total sense when what I'm about to say out loud. It makes total sense once you say it. But I swear, there was this very clear aha moment for me getting to this. If these words describe Jesus, they should also describe us. It sounds really simple when you say it, but seriously, if these words describe Jesus, these words should describe us. They should describe us as individuals, and they should describe us as a faith community. I think this is why Jesus asked the question. Not because there was going to be some sort of exam we needed to pass, and Jesus wanted to make sure we had our short answers and essays ready. I believe Jesus asked them so that we would have a sense of where we want to journey with our lives. I tell you, if you're looking closely, if you're listening, two words that Jesus uses over and over in the Gospels are go and do. When Jesus asks, who do you say I am? He's waiting and ready to hold us to our answer, that we might go and do it. If our answer is, Jesus, your grace, go and do it. Jesus, your hope, go and be it. Jesus, your welcome, go and offer it. You see, if these are our answers, these things are what we should be. When this congregation lives its values, hope, peace, love, and joy are brought to the world. When this congregation is at its best, people will see service, justice, grace, and welcome not just on our banners, but in our lives. I tell you, this week has been a very, very exciting and special one for us as a congregation. We, along with two other United Methodist congregations here in Denver, made a very bold and powerful statement in a very large and public forum. There are 70,000 copies of Westward's Best of Denver issue in the hands of people all over town right now, which means there are 70,000 copies of our full-page ad declaring our openness to all people, including their weddings. And I tell you, if you read, and there's actually some copies floating around the sanctuary, and it's also on Facebook, but if you read what's written, the actual copy of the text, the words service, justice, grace, and welcome don't actually appear in the ad copy. But let me tell you, these words are all over this. Because these are the words that inspire it. These words describe Jesus. These words should describe us. And so as we continue on this journey of relationship together, I pray you'll hear the question clearly and allow your answers to take shape so that your answers might shape your lives. So, what are your words? Amen.